Plaza América, sea Chile, Argentina, Uruguay, Paraguay, Bolivia, Perú, Ecuador, Brasil, Colombia, Venezuela, Guyana, Panamá, Costa Rica, Nicaragua, Honduras, El Salvador, Guatemala, México, Cuba, República Dominicana, Jamaica, Haití, las Antillas, United States, Canadá, a my motherland, mi patria, Puerto Rico.
You know what? That Bad Bunny, he's a pretty good bunny.
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight.
That's why.
I got the feeling that something ain't right.
No, it ain't.
I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair. And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
I am. From Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is The Bradcast. That's heard on KPFK, 90.7 FM in L.A., 98.7 in Santa Barbara, 93.7 in San Diego, 99.5 FM in Ridgecrest and China Lake, California. Also in California, in Red Bluff and Redding on KFOI and Round Mountains, KKRN. Up in Oregon on the Central Coast on KYAQ, Cottage Grove's KSO, Eugene's KEPW. Lanchester, Pennsylvania's W News, Maui, Hawaii's KAKU, in Columbus, Ohio on WGRN, Palinville, New York's WLPP, Rochester, New York's WRFZ, down in New Orleans on WHIV, out in Gallup, New Mexico on KNIZ, Concord, New Hampshire's WNHN, Fayetteville, Arkansas's KPSQ, in Seattle, home of the Super Bowl champion Seahawks on KODX, Richmond, Virginia's WRWK, Fairmont, West Virginia's WEFR, Janesville, Wisconsin's WADR, Minneapolis, St. Paul's AM 950, KTNF. We also stream coast to coast and around the globe every day on the internets on the Progressive Voices channel, Netroots Radio, Radio for Humans, NicoleSandler.com, Radio Free Brooklyn, No Lies Radio, Detour Talk, Delmarva FM, and most of your favorite podcast sites blanketing planet Earth. I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and all-around swell fellow and good bunny, says me. Thank you very much for joining us. Welcome to the Bradcast after a weekend of mayhem and Super Bowl fun, which actually was such a dull game for a change that, thank God, Donald Trump's latest random nemesis, Puerto Rico resident, U.S. citizen, Bad Bunny performed at it. Kind of saved the day, if you ask me, Desi Doyen.
Oh, yes. It was a very fun Super Bowl halftime show.
Yeah.
It was so much fun.
You're still recovering, aren't you? He blew the house down, in fact. Literally, in one case, if you actually watch the show, he smashed into a casita house party in a fantastic celebration of the Puerto Rican homeland of Bad Bunny, the most widely streamed artist on the planet for some 5 years going now. You would think that success would at least endure him to Donald Trump, but no, not wide enough, too Hispanic-y for him. His actual name, Benito Antonio Martinez Ocasio. It was, frankly, a glorious musical and dance celebration, almost entirely in Spanish, which, of course, drove MAGA and the President of the United States crazy. Long before the Super Bowl halftime show even happened, and even before, long before just 1 week earlier, when Bad Bunny became the first to win a Grammy for Album of the Year that was entirely in the Spanish language. And before his acceptance speeches heard around the world that included the phrase "ice out" to a rousing, I don't know, minute, two, 3 minutes of applause, and the apparently very dangerous phrase that, quote, "The only thing more powerful than hate is love," a phrase which also made its way onto the Jumbotron screen at the end of Bad Bunny's performance at the Super Bowl. As he said in English, "God bless America," before going on to list all of the countries that make up the Americas, both North and South, as you heard at the top of our show just now, before Bad Bunny finally spiked a football with the message on it, "Together, we are America." Well, no wonder Donald Trump hates him. The reviews of that performance, by the way, from serious folks were universally raving in favor of the performance by the man who maybe we should call Badass Bunny at this point. He did have at least one critic, however, in the racist criminal currently serving as president of the United States. Donald Trump had previously expressed outrage that Ocasio would be performing at halftime, even though he is a U.S. citizen. He is born and raised in the U.S. territory of Puerto Rico. I think we should all be quite proud of him. But on Sunday night, Trump took to his failing social media site to post an even more pathetic, but frankly hilarious, review of the performance to say, and I quote, because it is hysterical and so wildly out of step with, well, pretty much everyone in the world who watched it on Sunday. He said, quote, the Super Bowl halftime show is absolutely terrible. One of the worst ever. It makes no sense. Is an affront to the greatness of America and doesn't represent our standards of success, creativity, or excellence. Really? Nobody understands a word this guy is saying, said Trump. Well, nobody other than the tens or, I guess, hundreds of millions who speak Spanish and were watching the game live on Sunday. Other than that, nobody understands a word he's saying. And the dancing, he said, is disgusting, especially for young children that are watching from throughout the USA and all over the world. And of course, you know, based on the way he's dealt with the Epstein files, how much Donald Trump is terribly concerned about the corruption of innocent young girls. He continued, quote, this quote show is just a quote slap in the face. Why a slap in the face in quotes? I don't know. A slap in the face to our country. Sure. Whatever, Grandpa.
Well, you know, it does seem like a lot of the MAGA people who are so very upset about this halftime show, it seems like they're always really angry and really unhappy and just unable to enjoy anything. Yeah.
Anything. If they didn't have, you know, if they weren't angry, they wouldn't have anything to do at all day long. So, we would expect no less from this twisted president of the United States, who late last week, he helped kick off February's Black History Month by posting a video depicting former president of the United States, Barack Obama, and First Lady Michelle Obama as gorillas. Because, yep, that wouldn't be a slap in the face to the country at all, right? And yes, while the post was eventually taken down, Trump decidedly still refuses to apologize for having depicted Barack and Michelle Obama as gorillas. What do I have to apologize for? Thus is the mad, mad, mad world that we are all for the moment forced to live in, though happily we do have a way to start working our way out of it, and this year, beginning with the critical midterm elections this fall. As a matter of fact, the primaries start next month. These are the elections that Donald Trump is so terrified of that he is hoping to scare you into believing that he will be somehow federalizing, nationalizing our elections somehow by having the Republican Party take them over or something. As we noted last week, it is by and large an empty threat. By a very weak man. He has zero legal or constitutional power to do anything like it, but he can try and create as much chaos and fear as possible around our elections and hope that, oh, I don't know, somehow that works out for him. We will discuss some of the ways that he could do that, that he's trying to do that, when we are joined momentarily by election transparency, security, and voting system expert Marilyn Marks of the Coalition for Good Governance to help us understand what to make of that recent raid that was carried out by Trump's FBI at an elections warehouse just outside of Atlanta at the Fulton County Elections warehouse and hub. They had a search warrant. It was signed by a judge, purportedly allowing the FBI agents to remove hundreds of boxes of ballots from the 2020 election that have been stored there. The election that Trump likes to pretend that he won, that he decidedly lost. They also took other material from that same election. Much more on that with Marilyn momentarily, but a couple of related items first. Last week, we reported on the results of a special election for the Texas State Senate. in a very, very red district of the Lone Star State, which was won by Donald Trump. This particular district was won by 17 points back in 2024 by Trump. But last week, the Democratic candidate for this special election for the state Senate defeated his Republican opponent by 14 points, which is an overall 31-point swing for the Democrats. Yes, deep in the heart, deep red heart of MAGA country in Texas. That ought to have Republicans quaking in their boots this week. But if that did not work, well, what happened over this past weekend probably won't make them feel any better about their electoral odds this fall, as reported by, Donald Trump's new favorite network news outlet, CBS News, on Sunday. Louisiana Democrat Chasity Verrett Martinez defeated her Republican opponent by double digits in the special election on Saturday for state house in a district in Louisiana that Donald Trump won by 13 points back in 2024. Martinez won with 62% of the vote, compared to 38% for her Republican opponent, Brad Daigle. That, according to the official results from the Louisiana Secretary of State this afternoon. In that, in a district that Trump won by double digits, Martinez's win was not a flip of that particular state house seat, despite it being in a district that voted heavily for Trump in 24. The seat was previously held by a Democrat who was appointed by the state's Republican governor to be a commissioner on a state commission, opening up what Republicans had seen as its one of its prime pickup opportunities since Trump won that district three times. He didn't even have to pretend he won that district like he does in Georgia. He actually won it three times, but alas, it was not to be. Martinez's win was a 37-point swing from the 2024 results for the Democrats, coming on the heels of last week's special election for state Senate, which was, in fact, a flip from red to blue for the Democrats down in Texas, as they took over a seat held by the GOP down there for more than 40 years. Saturday's election in Louisiana was yet another reason for Republicans to move into full-blown panic mode. Or at least, maybe they would be in full-blown panic mode if they were smart. For the record, Republicans have not held any, had any special election legislative pickups during Donald Trump's entire second term to date. Democrats, meanwhile, have flipped eight previously GOP-held districts in special elections since Trump took office again last year, just over a year ago. As to Republicans panicking, well, Trump's recent comments about nationalizing the elections and or having Republicans take them over in 15 different places, whatever that means and wherever that means, that reeks of, if you ask me, and frankly, as TPM's Josh Marshall described it last week, big loser energy for Donald Trump. In the wake of that big loser energy, secretaries of state and Democratic governors are publicly and forcefully rebuking Trump's threat last week to nationalize voting, as he described it, which, as we've been trying to underscore for some time, he cannot do. He cannot do. Don't let him scare you. He can't do it. These are his threats to do so nonetheless. As the state's rights to administer elections are very clearly outlined in the U.S. Constitution, if that sort of thing still matters around here. Nonetheless, as TPM reported over the weekend, all 24 Democratic governors and Democratic and Republican secretaries of state condemned Trump's remarks and his ongoing attempts to exert more control over the nation's election system. Following a podcast interview with the MAGA conspiracy theorist and now former deputy FBI director under Donald Trump, Dan Bongino, last Monday, when Trump called on Republicans to somehow, quote, nationalize voting, suggesting they could somehow I don't know, seize election machines, or at least the mechanisms for them, in 15 places. While he didn't mention which places in that interview, later in the week, he suggested he may have meant seizing election administration in places like, I don't know, Detroit, Atlanta, Philadelphia, you know, those jurisdictions with, as it turns out, the most black voters. Did I mention Happy Black History Month? Michigan Secretary of State Jocelyn Benson, in a social media post, charged, quote, "These baseless attacks rehashing the 2020 election are meant to sow distrust and suppress turnout. It's yet another attempt by Donald Trump to undermine voters' power at the ballot box." Democratic Colorado Secretary of State Jenna Griswold called Trump's remarks, quote, "not a good idea," adding, quote, "it's not a constitutional idea." In a joint statement on Thursday, the nation's 24 Democratic governors also derided Trump's remarks, noting, quote, "President Trump's threats to remove the ability of states to run their own elections is an undemocratic attempt to silence the American people who are rejecting his costly and divisive agenda." While Trump whines about losing a free and fair election, they noted he's now openly talking about rigging one in the future. Democratic governors, they vow, won't let that happen. And all of that just days after, as we reported late last week, three top administration officials, Attorney General Pam Bondi, Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem, and Director of National Intelligence Tulsi Gabbard, all canceled their previously scheduled appearances at the very last minute at the annual conference of the Bipartisan National Association of Secretaries of State, or NASS, where those three had previously vowed to offer a unified show of force before the nation's chief election officials. But then they all canceled. One of the secretaries of state called them, described them as cowards after the cancellation, as the secretaries had planned to confront the officials regarding the FBI raid in Georgia just a week earlier and other related threats to their sovereign constitutional oversight of state elections. Even Georgia's Republican Secretary of State, Brad Raffensperger, rang in to denounce Trump's threats of nationalizing elections somehow, in a statement late last week, noting, quote, "the path forward is through national reform, not repetition of old arguments that don't add up." Raffensperger said, "I urge lawmakers to focus on strengthening state administration of elections rather than rehashing the same outdated claims." Well, speaking of those same outdated claims, I would not blame Raffensperger for not really wanting to rehash them, given that is that he's now running for the Republican nomination for governor in the state of Georgia this year after the atrocious way that he handled the 2020 and subsequent elections in the great state of Georgia. Did any of it warrant an FBI raid of the Fulton County Elections Warehouse outside of Atlanta to seize 2020 ballots and other materials more than 5 years after the election? Well, not as far as I can tell. But my guest today, a longtime expert in Georgia's voting system, having successfully sued the state to force them to get rid of their old, insecure, 100% unverifiable touchscreen voting machines made by Diebold, only to see Secretary Raffensperger ignore advice and replace them with unverifiable institute verifiable handmarked paper ballots, instead replacing them with unverifiable, insecure, brand new touchscreens that had all the same problems as the previous one, despite all the warnings that he should not do so. He did. So there's that. But what was that raid in Fulton County really about? Does it actually pose any dangers to this year's elections in Georgia and potentially elsewhere, as many are worried about? And what, by the way, was Director of National Intelligence Tulsi Gabbard actually doing down there in Fulton County when the FBI raided it? Let's take a quick break here. We'll come back with Marilyn Marks, the woman who not only got rid of Georgia's old voting system, but who actually revealed to state law enforcement officials that just after the 2020 election, a group of MAGA folks dispatched by Donald Trump, by the Trump White House, had actually broken into that statewide election system and made and distributed unlawful copies of the software used across the state. And in, oh, I don't know, another dozen or so, maybe 15 jurisdictions across the country. Yes, Marilyn Marks helped bring some of those folks to justice. Anyway, stay tuned. All of that is straight ahead. I'm Brad Friedman, and you are listening to The Bradcast.
Hi, this is Desi Doyen from the Green News Report and The Bradcast. What the public hears on the public airwaves matters. At The Bradcast, we do our best to bring you accurate news and analysis on the issues that actually matter, and we do it all independently without corporate or political influence. But we can't do it without you, now more than ever. Please help us stay on your public airwaves by going to bradblog.com/donate to help keep us going. That's bradblog.com/donate. And thanks.
If you are traveling back to Georgia, won't you take me with you there?
Yeah, take me with you there, and then steal a few hundred thousand ballots from the Fulton County Warehouse, if you don't mind. Welcome back to the Bradcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. On Sunday night, Josh Gersten at Politico reported that local officials in Georgia demanding that the FBI return hundreds of thousands of ballots from the 2020 presidential election taken via a search warrant sweep about 2 weeks ago now contend that the seizure took place with, quote, callous disregard for the constitutional rights of voters and county officials. That, according to court filings unsealed over the weekend, U.S. District Court Judge J.P. Boulay, a Donald Trump appointee, has been assigned to this case to rule on a motion by Fulton County, Georgia, where officials filed last week a motion to challenge the January 28 seizure of 24 pallets containing about 700 boxes of ballots and other records from the warehouse outside of Atlanta. In addition to unsealing the Democratic-run county's legal arguments, Judge Boulay issued an order on Saturday giving the Justice Department until 5 p.m. on Tuesday latest to publicly file the arguments that federal prosecutors put forward in order to persuade Magistrate Judge Catherine Salinas to issue the search warrant in the first place, authorizing the seizure of all the physical ballots from the 2020 election in Fulton County, along with digital ballot images. Those are essentially digital photographs of the ballot that are taken as it is scanned through the tabulator. Tabulator tapes, which are the ones printed out from those systems after the ballots are scanned, detailing results. And also they took voter rolls, apparently, the record of who was registered at the time to vote, who voted in the 2020 election. Judge Boulay said unsealing the affidavit was appropriate due to, quote, the importance of the public's access to judicial proceedings. But he said that he would allow the Justice Department lawyers there to redact the names of non-governmental witnesses from the version that is made public. Why would he do that? Well, we'll talk about that in a moment with Marilyn as well. The precise focus of the investigation that led to the seizure of the ballots has remained mysterious in recent days, notes Politico. The search warrant, which is available, the warrant itself, though not the affidavit that was submitted to a federal judge in order to get that search warrant. The warrant itself cites two federal statutes, one making it a crime to engage in voting fraud in connection with a federal election, and another requiring that ballots and other materials from federal elections be preserved for 22 months after Election Day. In this case, given the various questions that Trump has raised about Fulton County's 2020 election and civil lawsuits that have been filed in response to all of that, some are still pending, the materials from 2020 had been ordered preserved indefinitely in the custody of Fulton County, of the election officials there, where they were secure, at least I think, until the FBI took them at the end of last month in their unannounced raid. Without providing any actual evidence of fraud that we know of, Donald Trump has long complained that it was fraud that led to his loss in Georgia back in 2020, and I guess all of the other states that he also lost that he would have had to have won in order to have won the presidency that year. But in a phone call shortly after the election, he infamously but unsuccessfully implored Georgia's Republican Secretary of State Brad Raffensperger to, quote, find 11,800 or 780, whatever he said, ballots so that he could be somehow declared the winner. Trump was later criminally charged with multiple felony counts related to that phone call and other efforts to try and steal the 2020 election in Georgia himself. More recently, Republicans have complained that Fulton County computer files are missing images corresponding to the thousands of physical ballots, those digital ballot images I talked about. But county officials have countered that various recounts and court challenges verified the vote tallies from 2020 and that the law at the time did not require them to keep those computer scans. Quote, claims that the 2020 election results were fraudulent or otherwise invalid have been exhaustively reviewed and, without exception, refuted. That, according to Fulton County Attorney Y. Sue Joe, in the county's motion demanding the return of the seized ballots. She said, quote, 11 different post-election lawsuits challenging various aspects of Georgia's election process failed to demonstrate fraud. Joe also argued that the federal investigation is fatally flawed because it is continuing, quote, well beyond the 5-year statute of limitations for the criminal law that prosecutors cited in their warrant and far beyond the 22-month period for the retention requirements of election materials. She also noted that the Justice Department filed a civil suit against the county in December, a civil suit, not a criminal one, seeking many of the very same records, and there is a state lawsuit that was also pending over the ballots. Joe wrote, quote, use of the criminal warrant process to take immediate possession of the same records that are the subject of these lawsuits has the effect of circumventing civil judicial proceedings. This use of criminal process to bypass the limitations and costs of civil discovery should not be permitted by the court, the county attorney wrote. In an interview on Sunday, Senator Adam Schiff of California, Democrat, decried the seizure of the 2020 ballots. He called it, quote, alarming at every level. He asked, quote, why is the FBI conducting a raid 5 years after the fact when there were 3 recounts in Georgia? Senator Raphael Warnock of Georgia told local TV station 11 Alive that he had requested a meeting with Attorney General Pam Bondi on the matter and said that the FBI's actions were among, quote, awful efforts at voter suppression. So how exactly does this raid become an effort at voter suppression? Well, for the moment, until the affidavit used to obtain the search warrant, which could be released at any time if the DOJ follows the judge's order, until then, we don't really know. Though, while there are many public officials and folks in the media out there who have, you know, long been repeating Republican Secretary of State Brad Raffensperger's claim that 3 post-election counts of the results verified Joe Biden's victory that year, the facts are not quite that simple, even though nobody, at least to my knowledge, has found actual evidence to suggest that there was some sort of fraud or that Joe Biden didn't win the battleground state of Georgia that year by a very narrow margin of just over 12,000 votes. So with a whole bunch of thoughts on all of this and how this effort might affect now the critical 2026 midterms, as Senator Warnock is suggesting, the midterm elections in Georgia where they have a very important U.S. Senate race. John Ossoff will be running for re-election. How will it affect that race and beyond into other states? To discuss that, we've got our old friend, longtime voting system and election transparency expert, Marilyn Marks, standing by. She of the nonpartisan Nonprofit Coalition for Good Governance. Marilyn's organization has long worked in Georgia. First, as I noted, suing and winning to certify the state's, to decertify the state's unverifiable, insecure, old statewide touchscreen voting systems, only to see Raffensperger ignore the advice of experts to purchase a new, unverifiable, insecure statewide touchscreen voting system made by a completely different company instead of simply going to verifiable, hand-marked paper ballots that would help us avoid so much of the nightmares that we have seen since 2020 and, frankly, well before. Marilyn Marks also helped uncover the criminal breach of that state, that statewide system in Coffee County, Georgia, by Donald Trump operatives. A breach that began the day after the January 6, 2021 insurrection at the U.S. Capitol. Marilyn Marks, welcome back to the broadcast. Always something to talk about when it comes to Georgia's elections, isn't there?
Yes. Can we be done with that like in 2027 and just have Georgia be boring?
But that would be nice. So you think we'll see if we make it to 2027 at this point, yeah. Marilyn. First, I want to make sure, and I know you were listening to the first segment as well on this. I want to make sure that and Will, can you turn her up a little bit? I'm having trouble hearing her. I want to make sure that I didn't misreport any of the facts on the ground as you understand them up till now, as we're trying to make sense both of Trump's ridiculous, unconstitutional calls to nationalize elections on the heels of this FBI raid in Fulton County, Georgia, with, curiously enough, the director of the National Intelligence, Tulsi Gabbard, in town at that warehouse despite her remit to guard against foreign interference in U.S. affairs. So that was strange. Did I sort of get anything, get everything right, or did something jump out at you?
No, it is exactly the way I see it. But certainly we know that there are lots of cards left to see them put on the table here. There's a lot we don't know. And I think that wild card of Tulsi Gabbard being there is pretty unpredictable right now. I think that's the most unpredictable piece. And I fear that we're going to start seeing really wild conspiracy theories coming out of her presence there. And them making claims that somehow these Fulton records that they have in their hands now prove Italian satellites or Serbian servers and
Chinese wild stuff. Don't forget the Chinese thermostats.
That's right. You know, I think that they may go well beyond the mundane things that you and I have talked about so much, about the myth of the three counts, which is certainly something that it wouldn't be surprising if they glomped onto and showed the types of discrepancies and irregularities that truly were in 2020 that Fulton officials don't want to admit yet.
And I want to talk about that in detail, actually. But I just want to be clear, as we go to air, we have not yet seen the affidavit that was submitted to this magistrate judge to win her approval for this FBI search warrant in Fulton County. But as someone who has looked at the results of that 2020 election as closer than just about anyone in the nation, I know that your thoughts on those supposed three counts, I just want to underscore that they are well-grounded thoughts, and whether they are why this search happened or not, and what, you know, Trump's FBI may be looking for, I guess we don't actually know. But those three separate counts that we hear time and time again, the election was certified, it was counted three different times in three different ways. Every time it came out the same way, Donald Trump lost the state. Now, you've got some problems with that sort of characterization of those three different counts.
I certainly do. And it sounds very nerdy. But let me start with, we have no evidence that Trump won the state. Nothing has shown up at all that Trump won the state. Was the election conducted in a completely reckless, sloppy, unverifiable way. It indeed was. And, you know, there's a lesson to be learned there. We've got an even more contentious year here in 2026, and we damn well better get our act together to have a resilient system. So it is important for us to go back and know what was really done wrong in Georgia. You know, I think we heard Senator Schiff just say there were three recounts. Mm-hmm. No, there were not three recounts.
No,
there were three counts. Mm-hmm. One, the first machine count, and as you know, it was during COVID and with brand new machines and machines that are no good, as you and I have talked about for 5 years. Then the second count that was done.
But let's hit each one. Right. So that was the initial count, the one that happens mm-hmm. really in every election, mm-hmm. Everywhere in Georgia and everywhere else. People vote, and on election night, they begin scanning the ballots. In this case, they scan them paper ballots. Either hand-marked paper ballots because somebody voted by mail, or
right.
more likely the case across the state of Georgia, people go to the polling place and they have to use one of these touchscreen machines that prints out a ballot that may or may not reflect what the voter actually wanted it to reflect. Nonetheless, that becomes their vote. It gets scanned just like the mail-in ballots do, with a computer tabulator. That is the first count, and that essentially found across the state of Georgia, essentially found that Donald Trump lost by about 12,000 votes to Joe Biden that year.
Right.
Right.
Okay. Right.
That's count number one. What's the second count?
The second count is a nonsense so-called audit that really should not have been done. I know a lot of people are going to go, "What? She's in an audit? Shouldn't have been done?" No. Brad Raffensperger, the Secretary of State, at the last minute, he just concocted a bunch of really illegitimate procedures and says, "Oh, we're going to do a risk limiting audit and we're going to count 100% of the presidential ballots." And it
by hand, right?
By hand. We are going to do a manual
ballot
count.
By ballot.
And, you know, most of the election integrity people across the nation, we're going, "Yes, this is great. This is going to actually check the results." Mm-hmm. And people flew in here from everywhere to watch that mm-hmm. so-called audit. But
were they able to watch it?
well, the people who, and we helped some people get credentials mm-hmm. to do that. Mm-hmm. But of course, even for approved monitors, they kept us so far back. We couldn't get close to the counting tables, et cetera, et cetera. There were mm-hmm. all sorts of just observation problems. But when, you know, and I was with Hari Hursti, you know, certainly expert Hari Hursti.
Yeah.
The minute we had been in the Fulton audit room, mm-hmm. we had walked in as licensed or appointed observers, and we hadn't been in there 10 minutes when we looked at each other and said, "Nothing good's coming out of this." The papers were flying everywhere. There were no real controls. The entries of the audit tallies were not being put into any type of reliable system. And as soon as we could get out of there, we called Philip Stark and started telling him.
Another great election expert, been on a guest on the show many times, yeah.
Yes, and that's why I mentioned him. I knew your listeners would know Philip as the inventor of risk-limiting audits and the world's, you know, most renowned expert in post-election audits. But we were calling him every few hours going, "Oh, this is going to be bad. Nothing's going to work out here." It was just clear because the processes were so bad.
And I understand one of the problems they were having was that they were sort of counting by hand, but there was no, if I understand it, correct me if I'm wrong, that they weren't tracking it well. They were then putting those numbers into a black box, if you will, tracked by some computer program. And we would later learn that audit would have all kinds of problems with it. And you could look at it, they would find, you know, 100 votes for Joe Biden and zero votes for Donald Trump somewhere, or the other way around. Numbers that were obviously incorrect, that were probably just a typo or somebody entered the information wrong into the audit because it didn't match up with the election night machine count that, you know, got it something closer to right. So count number one is the machine count. Count number two is the hand count audit. Those numbers did not match each other.
Except Raffensperger said they did.
Raffensperger said they did. And then Donald Trump had the right to ask for a recount. And for some reason, he could have had a hand recount that would have been overseen by the public, a proper hand count. Theoretically, it would have been overseen by the public. Instead, he asked to count them, count the ballots again the same way they counted them in the first place with the machines, right?
I don't think he asked for that. That's what Raffensperger gave him. But let's go back to what the law requires.
Yeah.
The law requires a manual count, not a machine count. And it's not just publicly overseen, but Trump and Biden and Joe Jorgensen would have all had the opportunity to put a counter at every table, mm-hmm. appoint someone to be the counter at every table. Now, imagine if a proper hand count were done, recount were done, and Trump had had a counter at every table. He would have had a hard time then later saying the count was wrong, the count was wrong, because it would have been his people counting. Raffensperger knew that that was the law. Mm-hmm. He did not give Trump the recount that he should have had, and mysteriously, Trump did not ask for the recount he should have had.
It's like maybe Raffensperger had a reason to not get a very good count. It's like Donald Trump might have had a reason to not have a very good count, so he would have something to explain, to complain about later.
Yes.
But the bottom line is we've got three different counts. They all three have different numbers. They're not off all that much, in fact. We've looked. We'll talk about that. Here's my thought. They're not off all that much. Maybe Donald Trump should have had an extra 1,000 votes in Fulton County, but the count showed that also maybe Joe Biden should have had another 6,000 votes in Fulton County. These don't seem like huge numbers when we're dealing with millions of votes across the state. But in this case, it is a lot of votes because there was only a 12,000 vote margin across the entire state.
Exactly right. Yes, that's why it does. Now, we don't think that anything we have seen suggests that the net vote flipped at all. There were just thousands of errors, both for Trump and for Biden, mm-hmm. and they tended to generally offset. Mm-hmm. So we don't think the vote flipped at all. But when you begin to see the level of discrepancies, when you only had a 12,000 vote margin, it's disturbing. Yeah. And what is more disturbing, Brad, is you've looked at some of the details, mm-hmm. is that both in the audit and then in the subsequent machine count, it really appears that people who were, quote, adjusting numbers at the end were just trying to make it balance. And they adjusted things in order to have a public-facing number that appeared to balance when the details did not.
So when we say to make it balance, essentially to say, yeah, let's match it up to the counts that we thought we had here initially.
Right.
But this was not just Fulton County. This was also Brad Raffensperger, who had just got his brand new voting system a year earlier, thanks to you getting rid of his old one through court. He buys this new system. He tells everyone it's a $150 million system. All of the election experts said, don't do it. Go get a hand-marked paper ballot system. Instead, he got this computer system, and now he wants everybody to think it works great, it's perfect, it's flawless. He sort of went along with, hey, yes, everything matched up, everything was fine, but it wasn't. And it needs to be fixed. And that's why I know you continue to bring lawsuits in Georgia. But above and beyond all of that, as far as I can tell, there's no evidence that it was actually somebody trying to steal it, or that ultimately it was wrong and that secretly Donald Trump won. And by the way, had Donald Trump won Georgia, he still wouldn't have been become right. president, because it was four other states that he also would have had to have won as well.
Right. But the MAGAs tend to forget that, though, for some reason.
They do. But with all of that said, and with people understanding some of the concerns that are very real, we've talked about them before on the show regarding Fulton County. Any idea, with that said, what this warrant that led to, a search, a raid, taking hundreds of thousands of ballots, what it's referring to, whether it's on voter fraud, as the warrant, describes in general, or the idea of there was some problem with the destruction of election materials that are supposed to be kept for 22 months under federal law. Any idea?
I have my guesses, but I certainly have no inside information.
Okay.
I expect that the things that you and I have just been talking about, the wrongly tallied numbers, including, now we should make clear to your listeners, that that machine recount at the end, where we see apparently purposely double and triple counted ballots, as Philip Stark reported on in his expert report. Mm-hmm. We see thousands and thousands of double counted ballots, ballots that weren't counted, test ballots that were counted apparently in order to try to create the right official number. Remember, that recount mm-hmm. was the final official number for the presidential election. I'm expecting that we're going to see things in that affidavit related to alleged fudging of the numbers. They won't call it fudging, but they will use that statute that talks about fraudulently tabulated results.
Okay, good. And if somebody did do that, I do hope they're held accountable. I hope if Brad Raffensperger participated in it, I hope he is held accountable for it. But there is a little matter of this having taken place more than 5 years ago.
Yes.
And by the way, Donald Trump actually is known to have tried to steal the election in Georgia and was actually criminally charged for it. So if we want to criminally charge everyone, that's fine by me if there are actual crimes, all of which now Marilyn Marks begs the question. I quoted Raphael Warnock talking about how this is a matter of voter suppression. There is concerns. How will this affect the 2026 elections now, as Warnock refers to it, and as you are concerned about as well?
Well, I think there are a number of ways that it could affect elections. One, it whatever comes out of these reports, it will disgust some people. It'll scare some people. It will make people think, I just can't trust the system, and just make people not interested in voting. I fear that's one thing. The other thing is, and I'm going to have to hold the Democrats responsible for this, in fighting about this warrant, in fighting about the files being in the hands of the DOJ, they are saying things like, they can tell how you vote if they've got your ballot or you got your paper ballot. Well, we've got voter privacy issues, but they don't come from the paper ballot. Mm. So we've got people's, doing scare tactics on that. Mm-hmm. That's not good. But, there are no telling what kind of claims are going to come out of here. Probably also in that affidavit, I would expect that we may see claims related to mail ballot fraud. And, there could be scary tactics
vote by
about mail.
Mail
ballots.
Vote by mm-hmm. mail, not men defrauding this, but vote by mail, just to be clear. Okay, go ahead. Yeah.
Yes, and that wouldn't surprise me to see some allegations on that. But, in the case of Georgia, these things are so easy to fix and to rebuild confidence, but we don't seem to have the political will. And it really, neither the Republicans nor the Democrats right now seem to have the political will to create a resilient system, one that can withstand Trump's attacks.
What would make a resilient system?
Certainly by having, as you talked about, hand-marked paper ballots counted by scanners with thorough audits so that it is a completely transparent process. The hand-marked paper ballot is not having to have the problems that a touchscreen ballot, which is not a direct expression of the voter's vote, but of course the hand-marked paper ballot is, so that every ballot could be examined without question. It would be an irrefutable result. And that is what we need, rather than having to deal with another year of questions and then attacks by Trump and his allies, likely on the John Ossoff race.
Let me ask you about that, because I have sort of a theory that while he can't nationalize elections, very little is likely to come out of whatever they're pretending they have, taken from Georgia, from Fulton County. Even if there is, it's 5 years too late. But in the bargain, you blow off all of this smoke that then allows you to go back and say, hey, the election was stolen. And frankly, it is hard to prove that it was not stolen, because also we have so much secrecy. It's not a public process that is overseen by the people. That is what, you and I have been talking about for the last 20 years. It's what allowed Donald Trump to come out and make these usually outlandish claims about the election. Well, since it's such a difficult process done in secret as opposed to overseen by the people, it makes it easy to tell these lies and have people believe it. It seems like this is more of the same right now, Marilyn, and that you have suggested, as we've talked about it off air, that these concerns, whether they're legitimate or not, can then be used, for example, in the U.S. Senate after the election, where senators themselves get to decide. They're the ultimate authority according to the Constitution, I think Article 1, Section 5. They can decide, hey, what went on with that John Ossoff election, that re-election? We just don't know. Too fishy, too many concerns in Fulton County, just like the FBI. And they can use that to challenge actually seating someone like John Ossoff, even if he has won the election?
Absolutely, and it doesn't matter what the courts have said. I would expect to see them challenge it all the way, an Ossoff win, all the way up through the Georgia Supreme Court. And if we continue in Georgia to use these untrustworthy ballots and have a history of problems, like will become more and more evident, I would expect them to cherry pick that information, to quote Alex Halderman and Philip Stark and all of the national experts saying these are untrustworthy ballots, which is true.
Yeah.
And they will make colorable arguments to seat Ossoff's opponent.
Bad faith arguments, but colorable. The way Sidney Powell and the Trump MAGA folks linked to reports at bradblog.com after the 2020 election to support their claims. They were doing so in bad faith. My reports were correct. Their use of them was wrong, but they can do it. And when you reference Marilyn, you say it doesn't matter what the courts say. You're saying it doesn't matter what the courts say. They can challenge an election in court. Ultimately, the court decides, yes, John Ossoff is the winner of this race, the 2026 right. Senate race, but that can be ignored by the totally. U.S. Senate itself.
Correct. They are, as you said, the ultimate authority. I would encourage the Democrats to quit defending an indefensible system and install a very defensible, resilient system. It's easy, but we got to get over this idea of nothing was wrong in 2020, therefore we're going to defend it to the hilt, even if it costs John Ossoff his seat.
I've got just a minute or two at best here, Marilyn. There's 2 points I want to hit before I let you go. One is this new law that was passed in the state of Georgia, SB 202, that was passed after the 2020 elections. Among the terrible things that it does, and I think Brad Raffensperger supported this bill, was that
he was the author of it.
It allows the state election board to pretty much for any damn reason they want for any, you know, basically replace a county election board, the state election board, yes. which is very MAGA now.
Yes.
It can go in and say, that's it. Fulton County, you're out. The people who run the election there on the county board is out. We're going to bring in our own guy. We're going to bring in Sidney Powell. We're going to bring in anybody they want to run Fulton County's election, right?
That is absolutely correct. And as you know, and you were in the lawsuit, we fought this for 5 years, and they can literally overnight, they can in 24 hours hold a meeting, remove the Fulton County bipartisan board, replace that board with Mike Lindell or Sidney Powell or Rudy Giuliani. And of course, we're being extreme.
Oh, now you're
here,
killing me. But, yeah.
We're being extreme.
But that's true. They could do that.
They can put in a highly partisan bad actor who can do more damage in a few weeks before the court could get him out of office. But it is unconstitutional, but has survived so far. And unfortunately, even after all these 5 years, the board never talked about doing this. Brad, well, in the last 10 days, they've started talking about
that's what
this.
I was going to say. They haven't had, now they've got this FBI raid. Clearly, there must be something wrong. Doesn't matter whether there turns out to be for safety. We better get rid of that Fulton County board that has been raided by the FBI. Or they come out with some evidence that, you know, may or may not be accurate. We can't oversee these ballots. The chain of custody has been completely blown when it was pulled out by the FBI out of the Fulton County warehouse.
It's a danger. It is a huge danger. Again, I hate to keep repeating myself, but we need to get our act together so that the system is so resilient that, as Philip Stark says, they need, you know, make them steal it in public.
There you go. I can give you about 30 seconds on this. I know that you and the Coalition for Good Governance, Maryland, are now working with the Indivisible folks, the great folks at Indivisible, with training sessions for their various local groups on how folks can, on the ground, participate in public oversight of the elections this year.
Absolutely. And thank you, Brad. And in fact, on Tuesday evening, this week, at 7 p.m. Eastern Time, we'll be having our next webinar. And people can reach us at info@protecttheballot.vote. info@protecttheballot.vote. And we would love to have people join us. It's all about seeking best practices, resilient elections at your local county level, and the things that can be done there to protect the election.
Thank you, and thanks for all that you do. Marilyn Marks, info at protecttheballot.vote. Get more info, join in. Don't let them roll over you. Let's keep that from happening. You can get more info on Marilyn Marks at coalitionforgoodgovernance.org, where she's the executive director and founder of the group. You can also find her on the social medias, especially Blue Sky, at Marilyn R. Marks, the number one. Thanks, Marilyn.
Thank you, Neil.
You bet. Thanks also to Desi Doyen, our producer, to our board operator, Will Coltrane, and to all of you for spending a portion of your day or night with us. If you missed any portion of today's show, download it at bradblog.com. Drop me an email. I'm bradcast@bradblog.com, and you'll find me on the social medias. I am the Brad Blog. See you there. Until we see you here tomorrow, I'm Brad. Good luck, world.
You're listening to the Bradcast. We are 100% listener-supported, thanks to listeners like you who drop by bradblog.com/donate.